Thank you for joining us. We're Library on the Go. We bring stories and adventures to you. I'm Ms. Laura.
And I'm Ms. Barbara.
From the Cortez Public Library. And today, Ms. Barbara has a few stories for you, as always.
Our first one is called Porcupine's Pajama Party by Terry Webb Harshman. Pictures by Doug Cushman. Published by HarperCollins. Porcupine was eating lunch. He put peanut butter on celery sticks. "I love peanut butter boats with honey sandwiches," he said. "There's only one thing wrong. I'm lonely." Suddenly, Porcupine had a wonderful idea. "I will invite Otter and Owl to a pajama party." He wrote a note to Otter and a note to Owl. The note said, "I'm having a pajama party tonight. Let me know if you can come. Porcupine." Porcupine hurried to Otter's house, and he put the note in Otter's mailbox. And he ran over the hill to Owl's tree, and he dropped the note through Owl's letter slot. Then Porcupine hurried home. He fixed a cup of peppermint tea. "They will be calling any minute. I will sip my tea while I wait." Porcupine sipped his tea and waited. He stared at the telephone. "My cup is empty and nobody has called. Maybe Otter didn't look in his mailbox. Maybe Owl is away this weekend." Porcupine was getting worried. Suddenly the telephone rang. "This is Owl," said a voice. "Owl who?" asked Porcupine. "The Owl that you invited to a pajama party," said Owl. "Oh," giggled Porcupine, "that Owl. Please come. Otter is invited too." "I would love to come," said Owl, "except..." "Except what?" asked Porcupine. "I want to watch a scary movie on television tonight," said Owl. "Well, we can watch it here," said Porcupine. "It will be more fun getting scared together." Owl thought about being alone and scared. "I will be happy to come to your pajama party," he said. "What is the name of the movie?" asked Porcupine. "Monster Bat," said Owl. Porcupine shivered. "Come before it gets dark," he said. "I will," said Owl. "Goodbye." The phone rang again. It was Otter. "I want to come to your pajama party," said Otter, "but..." "But what?" asked Porcupine. "I'm trying a new cookie recipe tonight," said Otter. "We can bake your cookies here," said Porcupine. "Owl is coming, too." "Oh, goody," said Otter. "I will be there." "Cross your toes," asked Porcupine. "And squeeze my nose," promised Otter. "Come before dark," said Porcupine. "Okay," said Otter. "See you later." Otter opened his recipe card box and pulled out a card. "This recipe has been handed down from Otter to Otter," he said, "so it must be yummy." "I will measure the flour," said Porcupine. "I will open the chocolate chips," said Owl. "And I will stir," said Otter. They mixed everything together. "Let's sample the dough," said Owl, and everyone took a big bite. "We forgot the vanilla," said Otter. He stirred some in, and they gobbled more of the dough. "Much tastier," said Porcupine. "Quite good," said Owl. Otter pulled out a small bottle out of his pocket. "What is that?" asked Porcupine. "The Otter family secret," Otter said proudly. "I'll bet it's powdered fish tails," said Owl. Otter added a pinch of the powder. He stirred and tasted. Perfect. Owl tried some. "Delicious," he said. Porcupine sniffed the bowl. He thought about powdered fish tails. "Afraid?" teased Owl. Porcupine took a bite. "Stupendous," he shouted. They tasted and sampled. They nibbled and gobbled. Porcupine got out a cookie sheet. "I will do the first row," said Otter, and he plopped down three cookies. It was Porcupine's turn. He dug the spoon into the bowl. He scraped and scraped. "My spoon is empty," he said. "You did not dig deep enough," said Owl. Porcupine dug to the bottom of the bowl. There was a hard, hollow, clickety-clack sound. "The dough is gone," shouted Owl. Hooey, said Otter. I don't want a recipe that only makes 3 cookies. And he threw the recipe into the trash. Porcupine rubbed his tummy. I'm not really in the mood for cookies, he said. I guess 1 is enough for me, said Otter. Me too, agreed Owl. I'm on a diet. And Porcupine popped the cookies into the oven. It was time for the movie. Monster Bat flew into the sheriff's bedroom. Slowly he crept to the sheriff's bed, his mouth wide open, and showed a long pointed teeth. He was ready to bite. Guess what? Blurted Otter. Owl jumped. Porcupine screamed. What is it? Snapped Owl. I think I have to go to the bathroom, said Otter. What do you mean, you think, said Owl. Don't you know for sure? Yes, said Otter. I know for sure that I have to go. Does anyone else? Not me, said Porcupine. Me neither, said Owl. Otter lowered his head. I think I'm afraid to go by myself. Monsters get you when you are alone. There you go thinking again, said Owl. Besides, monsters are not real. Don't worry, said Porcupine. I will go with you. And Owl heard them run down the hall. Then he could not hear anything. He was alone. What is taking them so long, wondered Owl. I do not like being alone. Outside, a frog croaked. The wind howled. Wait for me, shouted Owl. Monsters get you when you are alone. He ran to the bathroom. Hurry up, you guys. You don't want to miss the movie. We don't? Asked Otter. No, you don't, said Owl. They watched the rest of the movie, and then it was time for bed. Can I sleep in the middle? Asked Otter. I'm the youngest. I should sleep in the middle, said Owl. I'm the smallest. Those are good reasons, said Porcupine, but I will sleep in the middle. You're not the youngest, said Otter, or the smallest, said Owl. No, said Porcupine, but I have 3 good reasons. It's my house, my pajama party, and my bed. Those are good reasons, agreed Otter and Owl, and everyone climbed into bed. Porcupine, said Otter, what is the scariest thing you can think of? A big hairy beast that eats porcupines, said Porcupine. Sometimes I see him in my closet. Otter looked at Owl. Owl, he said, what is the scariest thing you can think of? A giant black creature that eats owls, said Owl. Sometimes it taps on my window. Porcupine and Owl looked at Otter. What is your scariest thing? They asked. A slithery green monster that eats otters, he replied. Sometimes I hear it under my bed. The room looked very spooky. Suddenly, Porcupine screamed, Otter, Owl, help! The beast that eats porcupines is in my closet. Owl turned on the light. He went to the closet and picked up something. Look, Porcupine, he said. Your hairy old beast is just some hairy old blankets. Porcupine sat up. Blankets sure can look mean in the dark, he said. Owl turned off the light and got into bed. Suddenly he heard something. Tap, scree, tap, tap. Otter, Porcupine, save me, he cried. The creatures that eats owls is at the window. It has glowing eyes. Otter ran to the window. Don't worry, Owl. It is only a branch scraping against the glass. The glowing eyes you saw are only fireflies. Owl looked at the window. Fireflies look like monster eyes in the dark, he said. And Otter climbed into bed. Everything was quiet. And then, Porcupine, Owl, help me, screamed Owl. The Otter, the slithery green monster is under the bed. I hear its lips smacking. Porcupine flipped on the light and looked under the bed. You can relax, Otter, he said. This monster is not slithery or green. It's tiny and furry with big ears. Otter peeked under the bed. There was a little mouse eating a crust of bread. "This mouse sounds like a moose in the dark," said Otter, and everyone burst out laughing. They felt very silly. Porcupine turned off the light. "Imagine being afraid of blankets," he laughed. "Or little fireflies," hooted Owl. "Or," giggled Otter, "the munching mouse lips," and they laughed even harder. Otter, Owl, and Porcupine were no longer afraid. They were warm and safe and happy, and they snuggled together and drifted off to sleep. The end.
Let's hope Porcupine doesn't have any bad dreams. He might shoot some quills out in fright. You're joining us on Library on the Go. This is KSJD, Dryland Community Radio, 90.5 and 91.5 FM. And I'm sorry I can't credit the artist at the beginning, but the title is Polly Put the Kettle On. And here's Miss Barbara with another story.
This one is called Henry and the Kite Dragon by Bruce Edward Hall, illustrated by William Lowe, published by Philomel Books. And according to the author, this is based on a true story that happened to his father back in the 1920s. My name is Henry Chu. I am 8 years old. I live in a place called Chinatown in New York City. Chinatown is very small, pretty much just three tiny streets, all narrow and crooked like a village in China would be. Doyer Street is the littlest and crookedest street in Chinatown. It has a place to buy tasty little dumplings to have with our tea. I like the ones with shrimp. My friend Thelma Fong likes the ones with sweet roast pork. Mott Street is where my family lives. Our building is the tallest of all. From one side you can see all the way down to Pell Street, and on the other you can look right down into the next neighborhood. It's called Little Italy. In Chinatown, New York, there are lots of things to do for fun. You can buy sweet pickled onions from Mrs. Lee's stand for 2 cents each. You can watch Mr. Ang sort the mail at the littlest post office in New York. It's only 8 feet wide. But my favorite thing to do in Chinatown, more favorite than anything, is to fly kites. And on the top floor of my building lives a man who makes the best kites of all, the best kites in the whole wide world. His name is Mr. Chin, but we kids call him Grandfather. It's a sign of respect for his age. When he was a kid in China, everyone made kites, but his kites were the biggest and the prettiest. They flew the highest and always won first prize in all the contests. He is little and old now, and always wears a sweater with holes and worn-out brown slippers, but he still likes to climb the stairs to the roof to fly one of his famous kites shaped like a butterfly or a caterpillar, or his specialty, a big, beautiful dragon. My friend Thelma Fong and I get to help Grandfather Chin make them. One time we made a butterfly from broken-up packing crates. The body was made from cardboard, and we used a big pot of rice paste that Grandfather Chin boiled on the stove to stick on sheets of newspaper to make wings. Grandfather Chin painted on bright orange stripes and deep purple spots and glued on glittery gold foil and blue polka dots. Thelma Fung and I thought it was the best, most wonderful butterfly we had ever seen. Up on the roof, it was a perfect kite-flying day. A brisk breeze, not too cold, and sunshine broken up by clouds skipping across the sky. But Grandfather Chin was not only a great kite maker, he was a great kite flyer. Slowly he let the butterfly rise up and out and over until it caught the wind and just took off. He made the butterfly do swoops. He made it do swirls. He made it do loop-the-loops and reverse curls. Our butterfly seemed alive. A pigeon flew by, and in a flash, Grandfather Chin made the kite chase the little bird, as if our big, beautiful butterfly was going to eat him up. The pigeon flew away as fast as his wings could carry him. Our new friend, the butterfly, sailed over the building behind us and paused over the park in Little Italy a block away. But then something happened. A kid named Tony Guglioni saw our kite. Whiz! A rock flew past our beautiful butterfly. Whoosh! Zing! Two more went by, one of them just nicking the wing. Then smash! Crash! Rip! A whole hail of rocks and pebbles tore through the butterfly's wings. Trembling as if in pain, the wonderful butterfly sank slowly to the ground, right into the park. Tony and his friends tore the kite to bits. They ripped it and stomped on it and shook their fist. Tony's always made trouble for us Chinese kids, and that's why we never went into the park when he and his friends were there. Grandfather Chin just watched, never uttering a word. Finally, he turned to Thelma Fung and me and said, "Well, we'll just have to go and make another one." The next day, we three made a caterpillar kite. It was long and sleek and painted bright yellow with red spots. It had a face that made it look like it was surprised to be flying in the clouds at the end of a string. The sky was overcast, and there was the smell of rain in the air. Grandfather Chin made the caterpillar chase its own tail. He made it wave like the ocean. He made it squiggle and spiral. This time, two pigeons appeared, and Grandfather Chin sent the giant caterpillar racing after them. They were terrified and shot away from the kite. Whoosh went a rock. Zing went another. Then Tony Guglioni tied a long string to a stone and threw it right over the caterpillar string like a lasso. Now Tony and his friends reeled in our beautiful caterpillar, and once again our kite was stomped to pieces. "Let's go beat them up," I shouted. "Let's get all our friends and go down there and fight them." But Grandfather Chin just shook his head. "I have a better idea. But yes, get all of your friends." "Oh, good," I thought. "Tony and his friends will leave us alone once and for all." Soon all our Chinatown buddies were climbing the stairs to Grandfather Chin's apartment. Everett Singh, Francis Ng, Walter Holm, Constant Ling, and others. But when we got there, we couldn't believe our eyes. Pots of paste boiled on the stove. Old wooden crates were everywhere, and so were stacks of colorful rice paper. "Come on, come on," Grandfather Chin said. "We have a kite to make." "Make a kite? Now? But what could we do? After all, it was Grandfather Chin, so we rolled up our sleeves." That day's kite was a dragon. It was huge, stretching from one end of the kitchen to the other and back again. Who knew how long it was? It was covered in dazzling red rice paper and had 2 6-foot-long streamers for a tail. They were made of gold rice paper. At last, the dragon kite was ready. It was so long, it took all of us to carry it to the roof. This kite is so big and so beautiful that they wouldn't dare throw rocks at it, Grandfather Chin said. "Everyone respects dragons. You'll see." There was another pigeon flying around, just one lonely bird, all by himself. We wanted the kite to chase it. Before we could even get the dragon in the air, Tony and his friends started throwing rocks again. That's when I got really mad. "Come on," I shouted, and I led my friends down 8 flights of stairs and out into the street, leaving Grandfather Chin and the giant dragon kite on the roof alone. "Wait," Grandfather Chin called after us. "Where are you going?" But we kids just kept on walking, right down Mott Street, making a right turn at the Catholic Church, and marching 1 short block onto the park where Tony and his friends were waiting. Chinese kids never went into the park when Tony Guglioni was there, but we did that day. At first, Tony and his friends just stood there with their mouths open. There was silence for a minute. Then Tony spoke. "Ching Chong Chinaman," Tony Gugliani jeered. "Stop it," I yelled. "Tony Goo Goo Eyes." He was stunned. "Get out of our park," he finally sputtered. "No, you get out." "No, you. You. We were here first." We were all lined up, breathing hard, ready to start swinging, when all of a sudden the sky went dark. A big splash of color seemed to stretch across the entire sky. It was so big it blotted out the sun like a giant cloud. Grandfather Chin had launched the dragon by himself. For a moment, everyone in the park was quiet as the gigantic creature hung in the air above our building, and then it started to dance. It made a slow curve. Everyone said, "Ooh." It made a majestic swing. Everyone said, "Ah." And then that pigeon flew by. The dragon darted after the little bird as if it were going to swallow it up in one bite. "Stop it! Stop it!" Tony screamed. "That's my pigeon." "Huh?" we all said. "Your pigeon? What are you talking about?" That's when I began to understand. In Little Italy, they kept pet pigeons, homing pigeons, in cages on their roofs. They told me that homing pigeons are specially trained to always come home. He told me how our kites scared the little birds, and sometimes they flew away and never came back. "And that pigeon is my favorite. Make that dragon leave my pigeon alone." And then great big Tony Guglioni actually started to cry. I didn't even know what to say. Thelma Fung didn't know what to say. Everett Singh, Francis Ng, and Constant Ling didn't know what to say. We all just stood there, too surprised to move. And then I got an idea. "Grandfather Chin, stop!" I shouted up to the rooftop. Francis Ng, Walter Holm, and Constant Ling joined in. Then even Tony and his friends started shouting. "Grandfather! Grandfather! What's his name? Grandfather Chin, stop!" All at once, we started running up the hill to Mott Street. The Chinese kids, Tony Gugliani and his friends, everybody running and shouting, "Grandfather Chin, stop! Stop!" We ran right up to our building and dashed through the door, up the streets, stairs, still shouting, "Grandfather Chin, stop! Stop!" By the time we got there, we were all out of breath. "Grandfather! Stop! Pigeon! Pet! Tony's! Please! Oh!" Grandfather Chin just looked at me. Then he looked at Tony. Then he looked at my friends and Tony's friends. Finally he said, "Are you all crazy?" When we told him about Tony's pet bird, Grandfather immediately reeled in the big, beautiful dragon. My friends and I watched as the poor, frightened homing pigeon made a couple of big, graceful circles and flew off to a cage we could see on the roof of a building a couple of blocks away. Everyone let out a sigh of relief. And then, for the first time, Tony took a good, hard look at our dragon kite. "Where did you buy it?" We laughed and told him how we made kites out of packing crates and rice paper, and how Grandfather Chin painted on the faces. "I guess I'm sorry we threw rocks at them," he paused. "It was our pet birds we were worried about." We Chinese kids were sorry too, and we said so, one by one. And then we had another idea. From that day on, the Chinese kids fly their kites in the morning, and the Italian kids fly their birds in the afternoons. The really great thing about this is, now we can admire their birds, and they can admire our kites, and everybody can go to the park whenever they want. The next kite Grandfather Chin made was a brand new specialty. It was big, it was silvery, it was all shiny and shimmery. The kite he made was a giant pigeon, And now when the kids in the park see it, all they say is, ooh, the end.
That's a wonderful story. I've been to Chinatown in New York City, and it is bright and colorful, hustling and bustling, everything that was described in the story, although it was many years later.
But it's also good from the point that a lot of arguments, disagreements, etc., come from misunderstandings. And learning to know what the other person is thinking quite often helps.
Yes, that's a very good point. We have story times at the Cortez Public Library every Thursday at 10:30. On Saturdays, we have a story time at the Farmer's Market. And we air here every Sunday at 3:30 in the afternoon. We'd love for you to listen to our program. It's also going to be archived on the KSJD website, so if you miss the show, you can catch it there. We are into our summer reading program. Please come by and pick up a reading log. This will keep you from losing your reading skills over the summer, so you'll go in strong for your next grade. Also on the 18th, which is Wednesday at 2 o'clock, we'll have another performer for you in our family entertainment program. And this is sponsored by Legacy and Onward Foundation. We'd like to publicly thank them for helping us with that money. It's paid for our entire summer reading program, the books, t-shirts, prizes, the performers. We couldn't do it without them. Thank you very much. And we're going to keep on here with Polly Put the Kettle On, and you're on KSJD, Dryland Community Radio, 90.5 and 91.5 FM. Thank you.